too many Tic Tacs in the town.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 3:38 starting time. Please welcome from Toronto, Ontario, Canada, Matthew Wiley. Play away, please.
John Scalflandia, 180. 180. That, again, was, and I played this after the Super Bowl and now. First of all, I love that track. Second of all, The Weeknd is from Scarborough, Ontario, which is about 25, 30 minutes from where I grew up. And I was going to do... Pet Shop Boys Opportunities, which is playing in a lot of channel commercials on the Golf Channel and on Sirius XM. You got the brains, I got the brawn, let's make lots of money, which is a great track, and I'm really glad it's being commercialized. However, this podcast was recorded in two segments. One last night, the Ryan Baroff Josh segment, and then I had something to attend to, so I couldn't get the initial piece out. It's filmed. It's recorded backwards, by the way. And so the continuity of it may seem strange. And then I was going to use that song, but today, of course, the Tiger news, which broke earlier today. I'll say something, I guess, in the close about it. But what else could I say? A content creator in golf that hasn't already been said, but. I just didn't feel it was appropriate to use an upbeat, fun, let's make money song considering the gravity of the situation with Tiger Woods. So I changed it. And so if there's anything in the second segment with Josh and Ryan that aren't that, I don't think there is, but doesn't lend any sympathy to the issue that's going on today with Tiger, it's that it was recorded last night. So there's that qualification. The DraftKings contest is out. Now it's up to 400 people. It's still $5. Of course, it's rake-free. It's guaranteed money. Pretty good payout. Who won last week? What was his name? Just an absolute G won last week. Apparently, he won everything. I'll get his name here in a second. Of course, I spelled it wrong. Dorfman. Dorfman 10. And, that's why I say you may be on the podcast. Sometimes there's just different, difficult nights for us to record. And, I didn't hear back from Dorfman, so we didn't have him on, but congratulations, man. That was a huge lineup. And so this week is 400 people, $5. So, get involved, huh? Get involved. And then Green Square Golf. Yeah, I want to mention that as well. So a lot of the stuff that we look at is form-based, meaning what's your recent form on, you know, there's two PGA, well, PGA and an alternate event this week, WGC and a PGA. What is the form coming into this tournament? What is the course history of the players who are playing in this tournament? The Puerto Rico Open, that course has produced some winners of note on tour. And, you've got players like Andrew Putnam at 22-1, which is interesting. Brendan Grace, pretty short priced. And then you've got the WGC, which historically at this time, which was one of my favorite stops, I went to Mexico at Chapultepec. And Chapultepec was one of the highest elevation courses, well, anywhere on tour around the world. And so you had a huge, you know, mathematical equation you had to do when, you know, hitting a lot of your shots, in that the ball flew so much further. Narrowly tree-lined, just a beautiful setting. And that tournament had a lot of memories. I mean, DJ, of course, but Tyrrell Hatton, Stenson memories. You know what I'm talking about. And then the misplaced Tommy Fleetwood high five with his caddy. And that's really where we got to really know Tommy Fleetwood, was Chapultepec. So it's kind of unfortunate that we're not going back there, but now it's at the Concession Golf Club in Florida, a Nicklaus design, and we'll talk more about that in the next segment. But it looks very Jack-ish, Jack Nicklaus design-ish, pretty favorable to drivers, pretty unfavorable to, is unfavorable a word? I've been struggling with the word, and I said on Twitter, is infuriating. I got it. I can't say the word infuriating, and I thought there was something wrong with my brain. For about 2 weeks, I couldn't say infuriating. I could say it now, thankfully. It was kind of concerning me. I didn't know if there was a condition on Mayo Clinic where I could not. If you don't say infuriating, you should probably see a doctor, like smelling burnt toast. Where was I going with that? Oh, yeah. So it's difficult for approach players. It's the Florida courses, right? It's Jack's Florida courses. It's like the Snake Pit or the Bear Trap. Every Florida course has a name for it. Or even the Sawgrass with its closing holes. It's just tough on approach. Good around the green. Good scramblers. It's going to be interesting. Good iron players every week. Three storylines from Riviera. Well, four, really. The wind. The wind. I missed the cut line again. I didn't miss the cut line. My staff here, my fictitious staff that I've created on Twitter, my team of 70 that is supposed to be responsible for the cut line, missed the cut line. And so I fired Jib. That's how you pronounce his name, JBB. So I've created this fictitious team of cutline specialists that I can lay blame on when I miss the cutline, which is one of the most important things I do every week. And of course, it's all for comedy. But let's just get beyond that part. So I fired Jib, who was my weather specialist, who couldn't even get the wind right on Friday. I thought the wind would be up on Friday. And so I said it was going to be plus one, and it was even. And so Jib comes to me and says, but sir, the weather reports, they were weak. The weather reports are weak. You're weak, Jib. Pack your shit, you're fired. He's gone. I will not have those mistakes 3 weeks in a row. How can you not get the wind right, Jib? It's very easy. You know my favorite weather tout is? Weather.com. It's pretty simple to see what's the weather going to be like tomorrow. They're pretty bang on, honestly. So probably should have just looked there, pal. Weather.com and all their dual Dopplers. And shout out to the single Dopplers out there, running weather. Maybe Jib was running with those. Imagine owning a single Doppler in 2021. Every local news station in the country has a dual Doppler. But there's got to be a single Doppler. Maybe Jib was running that. You hear that? What second of the podcast is that, and who will call it out? So the three storylines, I've got the four storyline out, was Jib being fired. The weather reports are weak. You're weak! You're weak, Jib. I drove a Cadillac Eldorado to work. What did you drive? Good dad? Don't care. Nice guy? Who gives a fuck? Get it right. First place, it's a Cadillac Eldorado. Second place, steak knives. Third place is you're fired. That goes for you, Yasun. And every other character on this cutline staff. I will not tolerate that insolence. Three storylines. Let's go back to that. I don't know. One, Lanto actually died on a hill as a content character within the golf community. I don't know if you noticed it, but when they came out with the rules official said, listen, we were supposed to go back and play at, what was it, like 1:30 Pacific? And the poor guy making these determinations said, listen, we got to, you know, it's TBD. We got to go back up to the clubhouse. And Lanto, I guess, it wasn't a joke, but he ripped the guy and said, you're making us walk back up that hill again. I guess he was upset that he had to walk back up the hill. I thought it was a joke, but I clarified with a couple people. The person who did it was Tron Carter from No Laying Up. And I DM'd him. I said, is that true? He's like, yeah, it's true. Dead serious. And so Lanto actually died on that hill. I don't like walking hills either. Don't get me wrong. I'm not looking to walk up. These guys are going to walk 75 miles a week. Forget that. Plus hills. Nah, I'm taking a break. I'm going to sit in the steps for a bit. Have a lemonade. But isn't your job walking? Don't you make trillions of dollars walking? Like, what's another hill going to be like? It seems pretty straightforward to me when your job is walking. Now, if they said, hey, Matt, you're going to pay you $12 million a year to walk around really nice places, you probably have to walk up a hill twice a day. I'm cool with that. I will get some new legs. The second storyline was Finau. That was not his fault. Everything went his way. It wasn't his fault he didn't lose. He made the putt on, what was it, the par 3 16th that he had to make? Or the 17th for birdie? Or the miss by Sam Burns? Those things are typically opposite for Finau. Burns makes it. Tony misses it. The approach shot on 18 could have been better. It was a impeccable chip shot, and he made the putt to get to minus 12 or to stay at minus 12, 12 under, also known as. It wasn't Tony's fault. I mean, Max, the third storyline is, by the way, if you think you permanently cannot quit Tony Finau, the two most likable people on tour and cheerable people on tour are Finau and Max Homa. There are others that I'm not thinking of. But Max Homa is a extremely nice person. And he really, really gets it and gets this DFS golf community. He's a good content creator. He's a good writer. He's affable. And is there anyone else? I mean, just by the way he walks, the way he presents himself, by the way he handles himself in stress situations, like chest up, chest out, shoulders back, he is a crafty grinder. Remember, we talked about this 3 years ago. Just a gamer. Someone said the belief that Max Homa has in himself is unparalleled. Tiger Woods, of course. I mean, obviously, I'm talking about contemporary golfers whom you may not think about. But think, I was correlating Max Homa to players from the era I grew up in that I used to, were just really good grinders. Just guys who would go out there, bleed, break their nose, pound for pound, were just tough as hell, and just give you everything every night. Bill Berg, Doug Gilmore, Darcy Tucker, Sean Avery, huge Sean Avery fan. Brendan Shanahan, who was one of the best power forwards ever. But that's Max Homa to me. The guy's a killer. I mean, he's got two tour wins. He's still 30 years old. He's a killer. That iron shot, approach shot in 18. I mean, who makes that? Who makes that at Riviera? You got to have some confidence in your game. And he wasn't playing well for a long time, and he admitted that on Twitter. He said, I'm going to come back and play better. I mean, I just love how he marches around the course. Plus, he's such a nice guy. I know that firsthand. He is a figure in this community. Lonto, TBD. TBD. So let's talk to, before I get to Ryan and Slep, I said on, I guess 2 days ago now or yesterday, the days are running together. I had a theory about top shots. NBA top shots, which is a phenomenon right now. I mean, these packs are going insane. And you wait in line, you're 40,000th in line for a pack of, that includes, you know, there's packs of 5,000. And I mean, like these images, these NFTs, which is in crazy ascendancy right now, non-fungible tokens, are going for quarters of millions of dollars because it's first release. And much like crypto, which took a nice 20% dump, all of this stuff is a belief in the fact that it's going to go up in price. It's speculation. Because if there wasn't a belief in that it wasn't going up, then you just paid $208,000 for a JPEG GIF of LeBron James. And that seems pretty frothy industry to me. And I thought that, is this the bubble? Is this the pin that makes the market bubble pop? Is NBA Top Shots the thing? I mean, I believe in crypto. I just know that it's all speculative. The store of value thing doesn't make sense to me in that it drops 20% in 6 hours. That doesn't seem very story of value to me. I mean, the perception is that Bitcoin's going to 100K. The perception is that my LeBron James will be worth $2 million in 20 years, which it may be, honestly. But the theory is that, you know, when we had cards when I was a kid, the problem was that there were so many of them. Of course I bought things in peak era. Of course I was at the top of the market. I would never buy something that was, you know, in a down market that may be worth something. I bought, of course, the Donruss set that trillions of other kids had. So it's worth nothing. And you think about these top shots in that, think about 20 years from now. How many of them will there be? 35 million? I mean, you get 15,000 sets every other day. And so, yeah, the LeBron James is maybe worth something, a lot. But these other cards, which are going for thousands of dollars, these randos, the like Pat Tablers of the baseball world in 1988, if there's 20 million of those, what's it going to be worth? It was always about, Honus Wagner was worth something because it was scarce and because of the condition. Everyone threw theirs out. Everyone put in their bike spokes, or they're not there anymore. So there's only one left. That's why it's worth a lot. And it's a mint condition. These things don't disintegrate. They don't depreciate in quality. And you know how many there are and where they are at all times. So the scarcity issue, I mean, you're very, you know, it's established already. I think that's a big part of it. So, I mean, I think a lot of these will be worth something, but I think a lot of the other stuff will not be because of dilution. The whole theory behind Bitcoin is what? Scarcity, right? Well, there's scarcity in LeBron James ones, but there's not scarcity in actually having a Top Shot hologram. I don't know. I think it's frothy. Just like the art world with these nifty gateways. Everyone wants to be a millionaire in an hour, including me. I don't know. Whatever. I'll probably still buy packs. It's fun to open them for $4. It's fun to wait in line. All right, let's talk to... Who are these guys? Oh, fuck. It's Slep and Ryan. I was going to do Ryan's intro music now as nose breathing. Nose whistling. Because it was a huge complaint in the previous podcast. But he got through it. Cash take you on the
national joint. Cream, get the money. Here we. Tiger Woods, y'all.
What? Okay. Here we are. Just a few friends on a podcast. Chatting away about golf. Right, Josh? Ryan?
I'm ready.
Yes, sir. Thanks for bringing us all together again.
Josh and I were waiting in the NBA Top Shots room for 5,000 packs of cards, and we were 480th. Oh, sorry, 43,080th.
Seems like a bad ratio for you there.
And I'm just thinking, like, this is year one of this, and there's no depreciation of these cards in terms of, well, I lost them, or, you know, I put them in my bike wheels, or I just don't have them anymore. There's going to be like 30 million copies of these over 20 years if they release a pack every day. So, yeah, like, yeah. LeBron James, one, will be always valuable, but, like, I don't know. Markel Fultz dunk in 2040, number 15,000. I mean, I have those Don Russ baseball cards from 1990, like a George Bell. They were shit. It's just going to be diluted, right? I mean, the whole value of cryptocurrency is scarcity with Bitcoin. There's no scarcity here. I don't know, man. I think it's just way frothy.
It very much so. I'm frolicking in the froth at the moment.
But totally.
I'm not sold on this at all. And I think, yeah, as we're saying, it's just it. I don't know. There's something everyone is saying why it's so much better than trading cards, because you don't have to worry about the condition or shipping them or if you're going to get scammed or anything like that. But
I agree, but a Juan Bell 1992 Jays left fielder utility would be arguably worth $11,000 right now. I mean, it's just
right.
It's out of control.
It's crazy.
LeBron James from tonight's $9 pack sold for $208,000.
I saw that. Yeah, I mean, so for the time being, I'm in. I'm mucking around, having some fun. Because I'm willing to be wrong on this, but if I had to make a bet, I'm bearish long term on this product. I think the idea could work. I was thinking of some kind of other applications where it might be more interesting, like Magic the Gathering, for
Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh my God. Yeah, we'll edit that out. No, but you know, back in the day, that was a fun game that you'd play. It had the collectible aspect to it, but also had the gameplay. I don't really understand just having these clips on your computer. But I guess I'm wrong, because I seem to be in the vast, vast majority here. Excuse me, minority.
I get the NFTs. I think that's fantastic, and I think it's a superb idea that has lasting value. I just think the run up here, no one's really thought forward about the fact that the volume of NFTs that there are going to be, and that some of these things aren't going to be worth what they're worth now. Look at the art. I was looking at an art page of that Nifty. I'm like, God, there's going to be a ton of this artwork. Don't have to pay $10,000 for a picture of a hat right now. I mean,
Yeah, the art. I've been on that website, Nifty Gateway.
Yes.
And the, I mean, some of the stuff is, it's the people are paying. It's just, it's obscene for these silly little images. I don't know. And then don't even get me into CryptoPunks, but I don't know.
And here I am. Here I am buying 1.9 million of Dogecoin.
Yeah. It's just a weird time where there's so much FOMO and
yes.
to use your word froth. Yes. And like, you know, I already feel like I'm pretty, I take some risks when I, you know, the amount I have in cryptocurrency or I dabble in trading cards, or obviously, you know, I do a lot of DraftKings. So I'm not the most conservative person, but when I see what's going on last month and I'm not all in, I don't have $100,000 into Top Shots, I feel like a nit.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's sometimes it pays to be a nit, I think. Everyone wants the GameStop run-ups now. If you're not a millionaire by 8 a.m. tomorrow morning, then I don't care. This is not going to win long-term. That's my attitude.
Yeah. Right now, my Top Shot account is doubling every day. And it's still only somewhat interesting to me. If it was only going up, like, let's say it was going up some 5% a day, which in any other world would be phenomenal, I'd be bored with it.
And here I am this afternoon saying, hey, could someone help me? Josh, can you help me with understanding something about Top Shots? I want to understand these challenges. And your first comment back was, I want to buy your Markel Fultz. First of all, you knew that I had it, meaning you inspected my collection, which is freaking weird. But then also, you razzle dazzler scumbag. You just wanted to take advantage of me somehow. I know there's no advantage. You've got an IQ of like Tesla. There's no way there's an advantage to you buying something from me. You know something I don't.
No, I was very forthright. I told you everything I knew when I wanted to buy it from you.
Yes.
I'm not, you know, but,
Let's talk about golf. Ryan, by the way, the nose whistling. I was going to intro this entire podcast with nose whistling, and we still may edit a cut out of that. I heard it last week. I didn't think it was that bad. It was just like, you know, your mic was picking it up. And yeah, you don't have to blame.
Yeah, I was wearing a headset, so we won't do that anymore.
Yeah, it sounds great this week.
Good. Are we done with Top Shot?
What?
So, because this is what Josh does, is he plays the shit down, and then he talks about FOMO while he talks about doubling his money every day, and then I jump in and I kill the market, just like I've done with Ethereum today. Which I'm doing with Bitcoin as well. You know, it's great. Yeah, I just bleed money every day.
There's a lot of crypto dumping left to do. I would not suggest getting.
Luckily, yeah. See, I mean, luckily I am a nit. You know, I'll put a few $1,000s in, and that's, you know, I lose it, whatever.
I think we should do a non-fungible token on Ryan's nose whistling. That'd be. I think it'd be worth millions.
I couldn't even hear it because I don't listen back to the pod most weeks, and I certainly wasn't going to listen last week.
No. All right. So this week, here's the deal with this week, is that it's at a course we don't really know. In fact, a lot of people don't know it at all. Not even many golfers have played it. And it's in Florida. It's Concession. It's the Concession. It's a Jack Nicklaus course, which Jack Nicklaus is known for. You know, a lot of hazards, wide open fairways, but then just a lot of stuff going on. This course, I don't know if you've had a big look at it, but it's Florida, Bermuda, par 72, 7,400 yards. It's wide open off the tee. I mean, compared to, you know, narrow tree lined parklands. I mean, first of all, I love WGC Mexico. I don't know how you felt about that. It was one of my favorite stops, especially post Riviera, the Chapultepec. It was just so unique. The elevation, it was beautiful. It was extremely tree lined, pretty narrow, but the ball flew 500 yards. And I'm pretty disappointed it's not there. I thought it was one of my favorite stops. I don't know how you felt about that.
Yeah, I think it was fun. It had a gimmick to it. I think, as you said, you know, with the elevation, with the drivable par fours, with like a 5-iron. I do think this course, I think it has some excitement. You know, all the par fives seem to be pretty reachable for a large portion of the field. And there are a couple of par fours that could potentially be drivable. So it seems like there is some risk reward here, which is great. And they've baked a lot of distance into the par threes.
But the greens, if you want to talk about a severity to this course, especially if it gets firm and fast, off the tee you can smash it. But the greens are pretty difficult. There's a lot of severity to them, a lot of slope, a lot of runoff, a lot of trouble around the greens, a lot of bunkers. They're smallish. There's a lot of water. So it's definitely, to me, an approach course, a scrambler course, a around-the-green Bermuda putter type course. I mean, you know, it's Florida, right? I mean, that's like the Honda. It's Valspar. It's Sawgrass. And so bombers and great, good iron players. But around the greens, swagger. Josh, your thoughts?
Yeah, I haven't put that much into
this week
reviewing the aerials of the course. Kind of have read what some others have said about it. As Ryan suggested, I our friend of the pod, Scott, had brought up to me, there are some very long par threes. And I think that's a pretty interesting thing I'm going to be looking at when getting ready for the week. Where did you see the green complexes?
I watched a number of deep dives on the concession and the green complexes. And to me, at least, the average golfer, they look complex. But they do look difficult, even to, especially if they're pretty quick, they do look difficult to a pro golfer. They're not huge. They are very undulating, slopey. What do you call them? Turtle shell greens, turtle back greens, Ryan. I mean, they're pretty moundy. A lot of runoffs, a lot of trouble behind the green. It's just, you know, if it gets windy, and that, I think that, like last week, that sort of adds elements to many golf courses, but apparently the wind can come up here at the concession. And if it gets firm and fast and windy, then, you know, it could be a problem for a lot of these guys.
Yeah, we definitely haven't gotten as much rain down here recently. I mean, not that I'm that close. I'm a few hours away, but just Florida in general, you know, it's been pretty dry. I expect good weather. And yeah, I mean, you can put some humps in these greens and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, it's Florida. In Florida, things are soft and flat. It's never going to be as firm as they want it. I expect this course to play a little bit trickier. I think, you know, not just the wind and the fact that it's a new course, but, you know, any Jack Nicklaus design is, it's intended to be difficult. He doesn't want to make things easy for these guys. And all of his courses always seem to favor the, I'm not going to say plotters, but the strategic golfers, guys who are just going to keep the ball in play. They're going to hit middle of the greens and they're not going to make any big numbers. So it's actually one of the rare weeks where I'm not going to favor distance as much as I normally do.
But he does allow access to big drivers who may be a little wayward. I mean, the openness of the fairways, especially the par fives, at least from the visuals I've seen.
Yeah. And look, it's also going to be way different because, you know, I mean, we saw a Nicklaus course in California. We see the Memorial in Ohio. And I mean, especially like when you look at Memorial, I'm not really going to compare that to this course. Like that is a very difficult bent grass, long, rough course. You just don't have that here. The greens are not going to be that fast. The rough is not going to be that bad. So you just have to really kind of look regionally more than who the course designer is.
So no cut event, right? With 72 players?
Yeah.
Or are they going to wipe seven guys?
Now, there's a few guys here who definitely don't belong, but, you know.
I mean, there's probably 45 guys who don't belong. This is a, right, Josh? I mean, this is the week that you really have to nail, basically, many of the top 10.
Yeah, I was thinking about this, that I think there might be a tendency for people when they construct when a no cut to it frees them up to go more stars and scrubs because they think, oh, well, I'm going to get a 6 of 6. That, so I'm fine. I can play any punt. I think I've seen it be a little bit more the opposite. I guess yes. on a full field event, when you take a, like last week when I took a lot of Charles Schwartzel.
Yes. Or Steele. Which was fine.
Yeah, Steele's a little more expensive.
Both made the cut, boys.
But when Charles makes the cut at 6,200, he's done. He did what he needed to do for you. You could theoretically, when the 6 or 6 percentage is very low, you could theoretically do very well even with a golfer who finishes in 60th place just because you had that 6 of 6.
Correct. But
that's not going to work here. No. You can't. You're going to need 3 in the top 10 and probably all 6 in the top 30 at least.
Yeah, I mean, not to mention when you play a guy like Charles, which you did successfully last week, you still need to get the studs right. And I think as you saw, as many saw, it really didn't matter because everyone was playing Rory, JT, Bryson, et cetera. So
you have to have the winner here. You have to have probably top 2. And so, yeah. I agree. And then you've got the pricing, which is interesting this week. You've got DJ, the top price, who you know, you come off these letdown weeks that everyone just starts fading because DJ didn't win, so boo-hoo. And he's 11-6. This course seems to be, well, every course is a perfect DJ course, but this one in particular seems like this is completely up his alley.
Nobody is going to play DJ this week, by the way. Nobody.
Nobody. Well, no. I mean, I wouldn't say nobody, but there's a lot of other options cheaper that Dustin Johnson burned enough people last week that they won't. But you've got Tony sub 10. You've got Webb Simpson sub 10. I hate to say this, but Bryson won here in 2015 at the NCAAs. Now, if that gives you an indication what type of course it is. And he's a different golfer than he was in 2015, but
it's a slightly different field as well.
But this allows Bryson and his 9,000 yard drives, which are not necessarily center cut, to succeed here. And he's very good scrambler and he's very good around the green and he's a very good, very, very good putter. I'm not ruling him out, and being sub 10, that's unusual considering what was he last week? I mean, I think
it was flat 10, right? Maybe 10-1 or something.
10-1.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, you're probably going to need a couple of those guys, I would imagine. Justin Thomas, to me, I'm Johnny Bounceback. That I'm going to go for the guys that burned everyone last week, who'll be low owned, who probably will play better the next week. The two guys who I don't believe will play better are Justin Thomas and Hideki Matsuyama. One of those two I just mentioned is dead to me forever.
Yeah, you planted your flag there. Yeah, I mean, as you know, this is a very pro JT podcast. And I will absolutely be going back there this week. Yeah.
Wow.
In light of the name of the golf course, I will be conceding one thing this week, and that's that I'm never going to play Matsuyama again.
He'd have to be in the sevens. He'd have to be in the sevens at this point.
That's the honest truth, Matt.
Wow. I think I'm the same way.
Yeah, the last few weeks have been very bad for the Matsuyama brand. But yeah, I mean, this look, it's a no-cut event. It's a small field. It's a golf course nobody knows about. And if you're just blindly going to look at a guy like Rahm, for example, who might be 22 to 25% versus JT, who's going to be 12%, like, who are you going to take? You're going to take JT. every time.
Sadly, Rory, Xander.
Yeah. Oh, fucking Xander.
I know, but I mean, I'm telling you that
he still ended up on winning teams last week.
Right. And here's the thing. If you want to do an analysis, everyone knows what guys are good, tee to green, ball strikers, good approach game. So if you want to narrow it down, say, okay, we know those guys. Just give me a list of the guys who are great scramblers, great around the green, and great on par fives. And so you do that analysis, and it goes Xander, Bryson, Patrick Cantlay, Webb, DJ, which to me is that's the list. That's the five. Yeah. That's the six. And then Finau, Thomas. But Webb, to me, sub 10, almost 9, love it. Patrick Cantlay, he's going to show up every week. Xander, it's going to be very tough. It's going to be one of those guys to win. So who in the range that you have to fill in the pieces with that, like Josh said, has to be in the top 30, top 10, that's not a complete scrub. I mean, I'm going to go play Laurie Cantor. You're not. I'm going to play Danny Van Tonder. You can play Valimaki, Brad Kennedy. I might play Lipsky.
I will say you should play Laurie Cantor if you're building 150 teams. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Yeah, I probably will. I just wanted to see your reaction to that.
But yeah.
I will not play. I might play Justin Rose.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, it's completely different just, I think, with the field, with the pricing, because while Josh said, and I do agree with, I would not go heavy stars and scrubs this week. You don't really have to, because, like, at the 7K mid-sixes, you have some really good players. Like, you're not going to feel bad about playing guys like Kevin Na and Billy Horschel as, like, your last guy in your line. Ryan Palmer is going to be very popular. So, like, I think you can still get, like, a JT and a couple 9K guys and not have to go down to, like, David Lipsky.
Josh?
Yeah, in agreement with that. When I was talking about laying off the stars and scrub, I think I was talking about just, like, Lipsky or Minwoo Lee or any of these guys. I don't know, EVR. although
Matsuyama.
Right, yeah. But I don't know if... Are we going down through, or do we just kind of spitballing names?
Okay. Spitball a few names that.
I think that Hatton is a very interesting play this week. I think, he has good success in WGCs. He won at the Arnold Palmer.
He's good in Florida.
It's out of sight, out of mind. I mean, we've all been playing, DFS goals for the new season for the last 6 weeks, and you're kind of in a groove with the guys that you're rostering. You're rostering Hovland and Berger and Finau, and people have been thinking about him for a while, and look who he's priced around. Finau, who's going to be chalk. Koepka, who's probably going to be like the sneaky chalk. Hovland's going to be chalk. Berger's chalk. Like, I think I really like that play for leverage and obvious and upside. He could win here.
Yeah, my only concern with Hatton is I do think the game log watchers are going to find him. I mean, can you look back? He's gone 8-23-6-1 in his last four events, albeit Europe. But even if you look beyond that, like you mentioned Bay Hill, but the guy's won four times in the last year.
Yeah, but does DraftKings, when you're making it on line, does it pull up Euro?
It won't go back more than the start of this season. But they pull up Korn Ferry Tour stuff too now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like Furyk. Furyk's made 9 out of 9 cuts.
Yeah, but
Champions Tour.
I do like where he's priced. I'll say that he is right between Finau and Brooks and Hovland, for that matter, and Berger, all of whom, right, are going to garner a lot of ownership this week.
Yeah, if you go chalk this week and you're burned by it, you're fucked. You're absolutely dead.
I mean, but considering there's Cantlay, Bryson, Finau, Koepka, Hovland, Berger on the three above him, three below him, conceivably he could be the lowest of those six.
Correct? Totally will be, yes.
Yeah, I would think so. And then just to kind of go down, well, I think down and up, Matt mentioned Bryson, who's the next guy up. I'll mention Webb, right, who's the next guy down. I think both of them also are going to be extremely low owned relative to where they should be. And we talked about this earlier, Josh, but I am very high on Webb still. And I think that price is just exceptionally low for him.
Love Webb.
Although I'm not as high as you, because you said there's an argument to be made that he's the top three player in the world. insert laugh track. This is an egregious price. He is one of the most mispriced golfers in the field, I think.
I think Ryan Palmer is, but I think he's going to be 40% owned.
Yes, Ryan Palmer's probably... I guess I haven't gone through all the sevens yet, but I mean, Ryan Palmer, I'm interested to see if people hop back on Ortiz and Bubba, both of whom missed the cut last week. Yeah. Who are, I mean, priced right there with Ryan Palmer. So, yeah, I think as with any week, it's about which one or two guys in the 7K range are going to be in contention on Sunday. Last week, you know, we had Fitz and we had Burns. And this week, you got to find those guys.
I think Bubba at 7,300 with the burn factor, almost in quit range like Hideki, but not there yet.
Yeah.
It's Florida. It's Bubba. It's wide open off the tee. He can bomb it. You know, the other one is, I said last week, I wish Louis Oosthuizen was playing at Riviera. One thing you don't know about Louis is that he's exceptionally good around the greens. Which I think you'll need a lot of here. But Louis tend to be popular, right? Especially sub eight. Mm-hmm. Everyone loves Louis.
He's too popular for his results.
Yes.
You're getting him at 8, 12, but considering what he gives you, I don't know that it's really worth it. And then the other concern I have with him,
that gives you, I mean, I thought he'd be like 86.
He just doesn't score enough.
Yeah, I mean, what's the ceiling too? Like, even when he's in contention, he's like not in contention. Like, what's his ceiling? Like 15th, 18th?
Oh, they give me Jason Day, who's $100 cheaper.
No, I'll tell you who I'm going back to this week. We haven't gotten there yet, but yeah, one is Will Zalatoris. Obviously, you know, Florida guy went to UF.
40%
play up that. Yeah, you kind of play that narrative. I don't know. People seem to. They weren't on him a lot last week.
He had a great Will weekend. Z fans, dude.
And if I can stomach it, and I'm not sure that I know. Neiman. I don't know if I can stomach it after what he did to me last weekend, but this is his best surface. He makes a heck of a lot of sense here. He's still playing really well. I just have to forget about what he did last weekend. But that's a guy, you know, he's now about $800 less than he was last week. Still playing very well. Probably have to play some Neiman.
Who's the absolute low-owned bargain basement gut pick of the week?
I have three. You mentioned one, Burn, for sure. I think, again, if anybody has paid attention, he has been exceptionally good the last few months. And I hope they see that he just finished like tied for 53rd in Saudi Arabia or something, which doesn't look good, but he opened 64, 68. So he just had a bad weekend with the win. But the three guys for me that stand out here, Burned, I will play. As painful as it is, Lonto Griffin, I think makes a lot of sense here. And as a very low owned, you know, high upside play guy who has played historically very well in this part of the country, Gary Woodland. And I know you're a big Gary Woodland fan.
$6,800 for Gary Woodland here.
Oh, I mean, he's won Valspar. I think he's won Valspar, or he's been very close. He's been close at Honda. Just makes a lot of sense. He gained 3 strokes ball striking last week in the 2 rounds he played, but he lost 5 strokes on the greens. And great par three. I'm sure when Celeb pulls up his par three from 200 to 225 yards, I would expect to see Gary Woodland on that list.
He is on that list.
I would expect. So I think Woodland makes a lot of sense.
Who are your picks? Who are the dirty, cheap picks?
this guy I like a lot that I don't know if he qualifies as a dirt cheap, but he will be low owned, is Leishman. This is a guy who has a lot of success at Arnold Palmer. He seems to be trending up. Thing I like to look at to see how popular, you look at his past ownerships, because even if people catch up with the trending up in play, it's not going to jump up that much if they're always low owned. It kind of takes a little bit of a groundswell of support before they start getting chalky. And he's been sub 5 for the last few events, or maybe that's not. He's been sub 10, but he was sub 5 in the last event. And although he didn't have that great of a finish, his approach game has started to tick up. And I like his putting splits on Bermuda. And so he's someone who I'm going to be interested in a lot.
I think that you can probably eliminate a lot of these Euro guys who are just not going to finish top 10 here. Except for, and I like Woodland and I like Leishman. I like Kisner, but he'd probably be too popular at 7K. I can make a case for Jason Day, although it's near Disney World. Insert laugh track. and that joke's going to be used so many times this week. I just thought I'd get it out of the way. Should I make a case for two guys? Bobby Mack, who I love. I was surprised by his price at $7,400. No comments here. And then Lucas Herbert. I had to say it.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'll say a couple of things. Bobby Mack, look, he's very good. I do worry about his short game. I do worry that he has basically zero experience and zero results playing on this side of the pond. I think there are better Euro options there. I'm also going to say that I think you and I are going to be very much opposed this week with how we're attacking the course. I am not going to be looking at the bombers like I normally do. So I'm going to steer away from the Bobby Macks and more towards the, the Bezuidenhuts.
Well, then I'm going all in on Brendan Todd.
He's
American golfer who wins a lot.
Yes. He's cheap enough. We're on Bermuda. I mean, yeah.
He's cheaper than Andy Sullivan. Yeah, how many tournament wins? How many PGA Tour wins does Andy Sullivan have? Rasmus Højgaard. It's a joke.
So I think one thing that I'm going to want to do here, since we have no information about this course in terms of past play, is when I'm doing hand build, like you couldn't really do this in like a 150, but when I'm doing hand builds, I'm going to make four specific type of event. So if I make one where this is going to play hard, that's where I'm more likely to play Bezgoat and play Usti. And if I'm think it's just going to be a birdie fest, then I would steer away from those guys and focus more guys who I think can score well.
Here's the thing about with the hand build crowd who like to use that terminology on Twitter. It's like you're building custom cabinetry in your kitchen. it's a little much. I'm going to say that the hand builders.
I'll concede that, but what would
I want a non fungible token of you hand building lineups?
What would you call it then? Just like pick and click.
I've got a 1-1 of Josh Slepko building a WGC lineup.
Yeah,
with Lori Cantor.
He talks about hand building like it's this abstract concept that nobody does. You know, 99% of people who play DFS build one team, and they build it by hand.
But I know Josh is doing it for the comedic factor to set this up, but it is a term used unironically by a lot of people on Twitter. I'm just like the hand builders. Like, oh my God, are you okay? Are your hands okay?
I have fallen victim to use of these horrible terms. I know I said egregious, and I wanted my stomach turned as soon as I said it, because that's overused. Hand build, but you know what?
What about first click?
Cash line versus GPP is next, right?
Oh, yeah.
God. All right, who's our winner? Josh, go. One winner. Oh, by the way, here's the other thing. You know, in between like Finau-ish range and Webb-ish range, well, Morikawa range is going to be an M range, especially. M will be extremely popular at 88. Tommy Fleetwood, 89. Loves WGCs.
Tommy Woltwood.
Oh, okay. Who's your winner?
I am going to go with Daniel Berger.
I'm glad you cut him off before he said Daniel Berger. That was good. Let's keep doing it.
Who is it?
I said Daniel Berger.
No, you didn't. Are you serious?
I wasn't going to go for one of the top five guys, but...
No. All right. Dazzle day dazzle.
As usual, yeah.
Fine.
0% owned Berger.
He's probably going to be the highest owned on this slate, correct? Just to be clear about that.
No.
No way.
It's going to be Cantlay.
I don't know.
It's going to be Finau, dude.
Like, you got Berger coming off a win, playing out of his mind. People love playing him. He's from Florida. Went to Florida State. It just all makes too much sense.
It'll be sub 10 Finau. They did it again.
it's going to be – the answer is answer.
What? I'm not playing answer.
Answer is going to be chalk.
He's cheap.
6,800. Think about what he's been priced at this whole year.
I know. He's been priced 8K, 85.
He's been 90. He's been up to 91, 94.
Yes. Yeah,
it's true. It could happen.
Gary, Ricky, answer have fallen in price probably the most.
Well, Fowler fell completely out of this field, so.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
All right, who's your winner, Ryan?
I've gone back and forth on this. I just, I'm between Hovland and Brooks, and they're priced right next to each other. I guess by default, I'll take the guy who I bet, which is Brooks, just because he was 30 and Hovland was 25. But it's a coin flip between those two for me.
All right. Thanks for your answer. The winner is Dustin Johnson.
Now you say it after fading him at Saudi, fading him at the Genesis. Now he wants DJ.
Well, he had to win last week. He had to win at that price.
He's going to have to win at 11-6.
But I think in a field of 72, when 71 other players are ass, he can win.
That was like the all-time razzle-dazzle right there. Matt bashes DJ for 8 weeks in a row as he wins every event.
Yep. Razzle-day-dazzle. Yeah. I learned it from the best, boys. All right. Thanks for joining. Thank you for the impeccable sound this week, guys.
Yeah, my pleasure. One last comment. Benny On wins Puerto Rico.
Oh, shit. I better write this down for Wednesday.
Yes, you need to add to the list, add a logo. I think they changed the name, but it's the same golf course, so just be aware of that. But there were some ridiculous lines this morning. Peters opened up a 10-1.
But can he win?
No, Peters cannot win.
Putnam is 22-1.
Yeah, Putnam, Grace 18. It's just the worst. But yeah, Benny On 28 actually seemed like a pretty good line considering, he's an actual quality PGA Tour player.
Gotta love Ben On.
Yeah. So let's see.
Later, guys.
See you, man.
See you.
See you, Slip.
Is there any more maligned athlete or someone that people feel like they can take liberties with than Tiger Woods and his life and his career and what they believe he still owes them? He was a risk taker. He was a philanderer. He had DUIs. He was a bad this. He was a bad that. What more, even up to the point of breaking news about potentially he may be dead, talking about him, you know, he had a DUI, you know, he was, he has the body of a 75-year-old, you know, his affairs. It's just, I don't know another athlete who people feel like they, like, is he an NFT? Is he a non-fungible token? Is he just this commodity, this digital commodity that you believe has no feelings, emotions? What more can he give you? And these broadcasts, all this late breaking news, and, you know, just thinking about his family and his kids and you know, everything he's given this world in terms of entertainment value, which I don't think there's another athlete who's given more than that, more moments. Imagine a Tiger Woods moment on an NFT. Imagine some of his Masters moments. Pay for that. But what, you know, calling him a risk taker, which they did today, and that paraphrasing that he sort of deserves what he gets. That's how he's lived his life. That's not how he's lived his life. And it irritated me because of the documentary from HBO, which was horrendous. I thought it was going to be great. It turned out to be horrendous. And he never complains one bit. I'm just going to give everyone all these moments. I'm going to create wealth. I'm going to create industries. I'm going to create economies around me. I'm going to create jobs. I'm going to create money. It always seems to be with Tiger. Well, what more? Yeah, but you're kind of a bad guy. Is he? Yeah, you try doing what he did and not have a million surgeries and say, maybe I want some pain relief. Maybe I'm tired of working since I was 4 years old and abusing my body and my mind and being in the public spotlight for 40 years. Maybe I'm just tired of that. Maybe I want some pain relief from that. Maybe you don't understand the relationship between me and my father. Maybe I just want some escapism here. Just, the whole shit today was just shameful by some of these people on the news who had no business commentating on him, in my opinion. There you go. And that said, that the whole narrative of that was set up by that documentary a few months ago or a couple months ago. Whatever. All right, this week, WGC, I don't know who's going to win. Who did I say with Ryan and Josh? I should probably put that in my brain. DJ? Yeah, probably. Let's see, look at DJ, of course. I'm spent. We'll talk to you at 181. I don't know.